jurist Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. once said, "Man's mind, stretched to a new idea, never goes back to its original dimensions." Welcome to episode 16 of Our Hen House, a place to find our way to change the world for animals. In today's episode, we will discuss a popular new cooking competition that's raising eyebrows and lowering cholesterol throughout New York City. We'll also give you some personal news from the world of .com, or shall we now say .org. Joining us today is animal law professor Joan Schaffner, who will be telling us about her forthcoming book, Introduction to Animals and the Law, as well as sharing some tips for folks interested in getting involved with animal law. In our news section, we will be discussing the oil spill off the coast of Louisiana and the implications that has for wildlife. We'll also be telling you about some big news in the media that has to do with little old us. Finally, we will be discussing some popular animal rights-themed books and talking about the results of our Facebook survey where we asked you to share your favorites. The results might surprise you. My name is Jasmine Singer, and I'll be your co-host today in our hen house, along with my favorite hen, Marianne Sullivan.
Yeah.
We're glad you've decided to join us today in our hen house, where we're coming down from an exciting week of happenings, including rubbing elbows with totally inspirational activists and eating a few too many pieces of cake. Now please, pull up some hay. Let's get squawking. I'd like to welcome my co-host, Marianne Sullivan.
Hello there, my little videographer.
Because I made this video this week that took me, like, I don't know, 5 days without sleeping, pretty much.
Yeah, it was a lot of work, but it came out great.
It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. We're talking about the video for Veggie Conquest, which is an event here in the city, here in New York City. Do you think people in other cities or other towns get annoyed that we refer to New York as the city?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I was actually in LA once, and I called it the city, and people started laughing at me. But I digress. Veggie Conquest is an amateur cooking competition unlike any other. It is the brainchild of activist Jessica Mahady.
Such a brilliant idea.
It is. It's really incredible. She comes up with a secret ingredient, and she gets a bunch of volunteer chefs to make this food. She tells the ingredient just 1 week before the event.
The ingredient and the type of food item, whether it's an appetizer or a dessert.
Right, exactly. So this time around, it was a potato appetizer dish.
Yay.
And she rents this space. There's judges. It's just like, you know, something you would see on the Food Network.
Obviously. So cool.
Yeah.
People have so much fun.
And I had so much fun. It was the first time I had ever been. This time I think it's sold out within an hour. And there's 80, there's 80 people. 80 people. And it's sold out within an hour. There's prizes. It's a really good time.
Then and there's loads of good food.
Right. Because there's a second course that is cooked all by volunteers. And their sponsor this time was Match Meats. And so they gave Match Meat donations, or whatever you want to call it, samples. And people, other volunteers, cooked the second course. There was like a cheeseburger helper type thing, all made with like Daya cheese. I can't speak today, apparently, and with Match Meats. So it was really awesome.
And all of it was videoed by you and your flip cam. I can't believe I remember the day I bought that flip cam for you not very long ago.
It was my birthday present.
You're never without it.
I'm never without. In fact, I'm recording you right now. I'm just kidding. But it was definitely the biggest video project I've ever done because I came home with over 2 hours of footage.
Yeah, you have been slaving in front of a hot computer. Oh, I think I used that joke last week.
Yeah.
But you have been for days.
I have been. It was, and now I'm going to get started on editing Joy Askew, who is, as we mentioned last week, going to be our first person as part of our Art of the Animal series. And Joy is a very talented musician.
She's amazing.
She's really love incredible. Her. We had some other really big news this week as well.
Well, tell me what it was.
We became a nonprofit officially.
Yes, our incorporation papers came through.
Our incorporation, yay! Yeah, our incorporation papers came through.
Step by step.
Which officially makes you a president.
Yes, now I'm the president and you're the executive director.
And that is what you will refer to me as from here on out.
Sounds very fancy.
It does. And that also means that OurHenHouse.com is going through a transition and becoming OurHenHouse.org, which I was on the phone with the hosting company today making that transition.
Yeah, I don't even want to know what that entails. I'm sure it's a nightmare.
It's actually not that difficult, but, you know, it's...
Everything to do with computers is a nightmare. Well, not the computers themselves, but trying to make things work
right.
on the internet seems to be a nightmare.
So we're going to be now referring to our hen house as a .org instead of a .com, but if you type in .com, you'll still get to the .org.
So fancy.
And if you email us, try and email us at the .org now. But again, if you email us and it goes to .com, we'll still get it. It's the beauty of the internet machine. It's the beauty of the Mac machine. And it's the beauty of the people at the customer service line at Bluehost. So I am significantly pissed off. They are like, who is this woman? And what is this Our Hen House thing? So that was another really exciting thing. And
for us anyway, for us, doesn't mean a whole lot to anybody else.
It does mean that I will be asking other people
for... our podcast.
Right. It does mean that I will be asking other people for donations because yeah, well, we can take
now
them.
Now we have someplace to put them.
We do.
We don't have our 501c3 status, but I guess I'm getting too technical.
Right.
But
well, basically,
that
will be
hopefully coming.
It will be retroactively tax deductible.
Yes.
And it was also, you know, I'm a consultant for Farm Sanctuary. I still run the activist meetings. I've been running them monthly in New York City for nearly 3 years now, and we had our monthly activist meeting the other day. It was a fairly small meeting because the last meeting had Gene Bauer there, and there were, like, really a lot of people
there.
Yeah,
he does pull in the crowds.
He does, and always, the month after a busy one, we have a really, you know, sparsely attended one. So I was like, oh, okay, whatever, we'll see what happens. There were 15 people there. The topic of it was environmental activism around Earth Day, speaking up for animals around Earth Day and every other day of the year, because really every day is Earth Day. And we talked to the various activists there about the things that they were doing to speak up for animals. And I have to tell you, like, one person was crying. It was a really touching, awesome experience, and I came home totally moved. The things that people are doing, so many of them were speaking, I kept thinking, you're a better person than I am.
I know. It's one of the ironic things about working on Our Hen House that we get to feature all of these people who are doing things so much bigger than anything right. we're doing.
Well, like, I'll give you a couple examples. There was one woman there who works for a national environmental organization, and for a long time I've heard her talking about how nobody at this organization gets the animal connection. They all order meat, and she's just heartbroken, and she's like, why don't you get it? And they're like, you're vegan, you're weird. Anyway, so she comes to this meeting, and she says that she has successfully developed guidelines in her national environmental organization for which she works in the development department, and the guidelines help determine what food this organization purchases. So for they're a huge organization. So for their catering events, their catered events internally within the company, externally outside of the organization, and she set up these guidelines. Among them are plant-based foods. And last week they had a gala, and the gala was all vegetarian.
That's totally amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it just shows you that just a little leadership sometimes can make so much happen.
Well, she also said that at first she was calling it a policy, and when she was saying policy, everyone was like, you know, fuck you. Well, they didn't say fuck you, but they were probably thinking it. And she said, okay, not a policy, sorry. A guideline. How about a guideline? And the guideline worked better because she was just, you know, approaching things communicatively and patiently. And that was just one example. There was another example of another woman who was there, who's a nurse in an emergency room in a very big hospital here in New York City. And she's been also really doing a lot of wonderful things to get vegan options in the cafeteria at her hospital. And not only just the cafeteria, but also the food that is brought to the patients.
Well, that would be an enormous tip for, because as we all know, food in hospitals is usually pretty dreadful. Not only dreadfully tasting, but just dreadfully unhealthy.
Right.
And it reminds me of something that happened not at your activist meeting, but that I heard of from a former student of mine who's working at a hospital in New York. I think it's okay for me to mention. It was Tisch Hospital, NYU's Tisch Hospital. And she said, I couldn't believe this, but she said that their cafeteria has a huge salad bar, which is a salad and fruit bar. And they have a vegan bar, which has four hot vegan items available every day.
Wow.
I thought, well, somebody's been busy there. That is just really exciting.
It totally is.
It takes just that kind of work, like you said, just being very diplomatic and not pushing people's buttons and just going at it and getting it done.
It's really these unsung heroes.
Totally.
They're just responsible.
I'm singing them.
Yes.
All the unsung heroes.
All the unsung heroes deserve to be sung. And they are really incredible people. So that was pretty inspirational, if I do say so myself. And, of course, Snice Soho opened this week. Snice, we talked about this. Snice is one of our favorite vegetarian cafes here in New York City. There's one in the West Village, which is not too far from us, but even much closer, a block and a half away, Snice Soho opened. It opened yesterday, and I've since been twice.
I know. I don't know why I'm saying yay, since the last thing I need is a block and a half away vegan pastry store.
It's like... I'm so excited. So
they have the best cupcakes in the world.
I didn't even tell you this. I went in today to get like a, you know, coffee, and I went in and I was talking to the manager today, and I was like, okay, so I'll be here every day. Okay, not every day, because I noticed he was scared. Like, who is this stalker? And I was like, all right, maybe not every day, but like every other day. And he goes, no, you'll be here every day. I can see it in your eyes.
Uh-oh.
He said, I can see it in your eyes.
That's really a little frightening, honey.
I know it is. And speaking of which, I'm currently coming down from a sugar high from the pastry that I got there, and I'm happy. Are you happy?
I'm happy. Couldn't be happier.
Joan Schaffner is on our podcast today.
I know, a colleague of mine who I'm very excited to be talking to. She does some great work.
I was just reading over her bio, and I can't believe it.
Yeah, she's quite the dynamo.
Let's talk to her. Let's just get into it.
Okay.
Joan E. Schaffner is an associate professor of law at the George Washington University Law School. Joan teaches civil procedure, remedies, and sexuality and the law. Joan directs the GW Animal Law Program, which consists of the GW Animal Welfare Project. She also directs seminars in animal law and a student chapter of the Animal Legal Defense Fund. In addition, she coordinates the Animal Law Lawyering Project, which provides students with outside placements in the animal law field. She also teaches the seminar Animal Law Lawyering. Joan has testified on behalf of non-breed-specific dangerous dog laws and has presented on animal law panels at conferences worldwide. As if that weren't enough, Joan is completing a book entitled Introduction to Animals and the Law, which will be published in 2010 by Palgrave Macmillan as part of their series on animal ethics. She also is active in various organizations, including the ABA TIPS Animal Law Committee, where she is currently the chair, the founding chair of the AALS Section on Animal Law, a consumer member for the District of Columbia Board of Veterinary Medicine, and a fellow of the Oxford Center for Animal Ethics. Welcome to our hen house, Joan.
Well, thank you so much. I am honored to be interviewed by you guys.
Well, we are honored to have you on our podcast. We've been looking forward to it. Can you tell us how you got started in animal law?
Yeah, actually, you know, I've always been an animal lover, but I only wedded my personal passion with my professional life back in the fall of 2003 when my colleague, Mary Che, who is now a D.C. councilwoman here in D.C., and I created a one-year pro bono project to research the district's laws governing animals at GW and to draft a report summarizing the existing laws and proposing amendments for improvements. Well, interestingly, that one-year project first ultimately culminated in the enactment of the D.C. Animal Welfare Amendment Act of 2008, but I became so interested in animal law as a field of study and practice that I ended up turning the project into an animal law program at GW, and it has grown ever since. I also have to mention that my personal life changed rather dramatically as well, as I learned of the various local organizations that were helping animals, you know, directly on the ground. I began volunteering and fostering felines, and now run basically a feline sanctuary out of my house. So, fall of 2003 was really a turning point for me, and it's been great ever since.
That's
so
amazing wonderful. That you had such a big success with your first venture into animal law. People do it for a lifetime without a success.
Yeah, and I'd love to visit your feline sanctuary one day. I hear it's a very, very special place.
Yeah, you definitely have to.
Are
come
you
by.
Fostering most of the felines there, and you're looking for permanent homes for them?
Yeah, I do have several fosters, but I must admit, last year I got a little overwhelmed, and so I haven't been bringing in as many new fosters as I was last year. And so my family has sort of gotten rather, shall I say, constant. And because I don't have any young felines left, I have a feeling that many of the guys that are here are probably permanent residents. So
you have found homes for a great many of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, last year, in 2009, I adopted out 43.
Wow.
And that was just in 2009. Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
Well, I think it's really interesting how, as Marianne was saying, how the process sort of, they both culminated for you at the same time. What animal law courses or clinics have you taught?
Interestingly, I've only taught one seminar at GW. It's been about 3 to 4 years. It's entitled Animal Law Lawyering. And I teach it in the spring as a co-requisite seminar to this specialized externship that we have at GW, which is part of what I call our animal law lawyering program. Students at GW take externships and work side by side with attorneys at a humane organization working on animal law issues, for example, the Humane Society of the United States or Department of Justice Wildlife Division or Compassion Over Killing or Oceana. And it's great being in D.C. because we have so many wonderful opportunities for our law students to participate outside the law school. And they work at those organizations during the semester and take my co-requisite seminar where I just discuss sort of animal law from a broader perspective. So we also have the basic animal law and wildlife protection seminar, but that is actually taught by the real expert. Nancy Perry from the Humane Society of the United States has been teaching that course, well, co-teaching it with various other people, actually for about probably almost 10 years now, and that's really a great opportunity for students.
So you have a really extensive animal law program there at GW.
Well, you know, we do have, you know, when you look at schools around, and this is sort of an interesting time of the year, because now law students or, you know, potential law students are deciding where they want to go to law school, and I've actually been meeting with, over the last month or so, I've been meeting with students who are trying to select a law school, and particularly those who are interested in going into animal law. And I would say we probably have, you know, the second or third program. I have to admit that Lewis and Clark has a fabulous, fabulous program out there in Portland, and they're doing some really, really great work. But here at GW, we try to, you know, we try to put some things together, and we have a very active SALDIS group. Like I said, we have our animal law lawyering project, and we also have our pro bono project that just works on, you know, different individualized research projects here in D.C. So it's been fun, and I do a lot of, I just sponsor a lot of things, different conferences. For example, the second annual D.C. Week for the Animals is coming up next month, and we host the Animal Law Night during that week, and, you know, just things like that. So it's a lot of
fun. By the way, just for people who are listening who aren't familiar, a SALDIF chapter is a law school student animal legal defense fund chapter.
I always think, you know, there are so many acronyms out there, you get completely confused.
I could have a full conversation in, like, animal rights acronym lingo. Anyway, so Joan, I know that one of the things that brought you and Marianne together as buddies is the ABA. And I was hoping you could tell us a bit about the ABA committee, what it is, how long it's been in existence, and what you are working on with that.
Sure. Yeah, that was actually, and I would say that having an opportunity to meet Marianne has probably been one of the best parts of getting involved with that. Yes.
Right back at you, Joan.
Well, Barbara Gisselson back in 2004 actually established the Animal Law Committee in the ABA Tort Trial and Insurance Practice Section, which is TIP.
Mouthful.
And became, yes, and became the founding chair in 2005. And so since then, the committee has been extremely active. In fact, the committee has received awards from TIPS as the most active and innovative committee basically each year since our founding. Over the course of the 5 years, we've basically sponsored a number of different CLEs, continuing legal education programs focusing on dangerous dog issues and disability issues and a variety of things. We've already published three animal law texts that have been selling quite well. And we get out regular newsletters about 3 times a year. We have a vibrant Facebook page, thanks to Ms. Sullivan there. And we've been working on marshaling policy statements through the ABA on behalf of animals' interests. I guess one of the reasons I got involved is because I do believe that having the ABA as a national, sort of the national legal organization recognize animal law as a legitimate area of practice is huge, and it really helps advance the fight for animals under the law. With respect to specific projects that we currently have going, at the ABA House of Delegates level, we've been fairly successful at passing policy in support of protecting animals during, emergency situations and providing appropriate holding periods in times of such disasters to both protect animals and their owners. And we're currently working on two other proposals, one to support a model bill to compensate companion animal owners for loss of their companions, as well as a second bill to provide, well, not really bill, but guidelines of how the courts and prosecutors should handle animals that are seized from dogfighting enterprises, puppy mills, and hoarding situations. In addition, as I know you guys all know because you had it on your news broadcast last week, the Supreme Court just came down with the decision in the U.S. v. Stevens case. And we will be hosting on June 2nd a 90-minute panel to analyze that case and discuss the bills that are currently being proposed to address the concerns that the Supreme Court raised and hopefully get those videos back off illegal off the market. And then finally, the ABA annual meeting in August this year is really going to be great for us. We are sponsoring a panel that will be discussing a variety of legal issues that arise when mass torts injure animals, and
like
we'll be rolling up our
scandal.
The pet food recall, exactly. Those kinds of things where there's some sort of either dangerous product that is sold on the market and literally thousands of animals are affected by it. And the other thing that's really going to be fun is we're going to be rolling up our sleeves for a public interest project there to help Bad Rap, which is an organization out in San Francisco that works with pit bulls and work on their vaccination clinic to provide vaccinations to pets in low-income neighborhoods there. So, like I said, the committee has been extremely active, and I've just been really, it's been a great opportunity for me to sort of take over the reins for a year and then passing it along to Marianne in the coming year.
Yeah, I'm a little intimidated. Joan, you're quite the dynamo, and the amount you get done is just unbelievable.
I appreciate that. It takes everybody working together to do it.
It really does. There's a lot of very active people on the committee and people who really care, and it's been a great experience. I know, as if that's not really enough to keep you busy, you've also been very involved in the no-kill movement. Can you tell us about your involvement there?
Yeah, this is actually really quite incredible. Last May, we held the first ever national no-kill conference at GW, which was the brainchild of Nathan Winograd, who is the author of the best-selling book Redemption and founder and executive director of the No-Kill Advocacy Center. He has been working tirelessly for years on behalf of shelter animals and has literally saved thousands of animals' lives throughout the country. He's put together this philosophy, a no-kill philosophy, basically originates from the most fundamental premise that all shelter animals and feral cats have a right to live in their respective habitats and be properly cared for. And he has put together things like the No-Kill Declaration, the No-Kill Equation, and the Companion Animal Protection Act to sort of promote this no-kill philosophy and develop strategies for really making it a reality. So the conference brought together experts in the both animal sheltering as well as the legal field, we had two tracks going on over the course of 2 days to discuss how we can, you know, work to save the lives of these animals in our shelter. And it was really just one of the greatest experiences I've had in a long time. It turned out so well that, although at the time we didn't think we were going to do it anytime again soon, we actually have our second no-kill conference scheduled for late July, early August this year, and it's already sold out. In fact, it sold out within about a month of it being announced back in January. It was just incredible. So I'm really excited to be bringing the 2010 no-kill conference to GW.
Wow, that's amazing. I guess people were really interested in that particular subject.
Right. Well, you know, our companion animals, I mean, we are probably the closest to them. And I don't know that people understand that, you know, the concept is that shelters should be shelters. Now, I understand the difficulty running a shelter myself, in fact, of, you know, being able to provide all of the care that you need and getting aggressive adoptions and the like to make sure that we save our cats and dogs and rabbits and birds and things that are brought into the shelter. But like I said, Nathan has been doing this for several years. He's got, you know, all of the theories down, all of the practicalities down. And now it's just a matter of, you know, getting people on board and explaining to them how, you know, what they can do to work to save our companion animals that are homeless and need loving homes.
What do you think that law students can do? People who care about animals, law students who want to get further involved, is there something specific?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's actually a lot of things law students can do, and I would say that they're probably among the most active because this is such an emerging area of the law. Many practicing attorneys, you know, never really heard of animal law. They graduated more than about 3 or 4 years ago from law school. So I would say that the first thing you need to do is, if you are a law student at a law school, make sure that you have a solvent chapter and an animal law seminar in your curriculum. They've been growing by leaps and bounds over the past real decade. But if you don't, you definitely want to start one. And the Animal Legal Defense Fund has an outstanding website with resources for law students to help in those sorts of efforts. The other thing is bring speakers to campus to discuss issues in animal law and educate, you know, many of the students that really, like I said, have no idea what animal law is. Because I think when people start hearing all of the variety of animal law issues, they find it's really an exciting and cutting-edge area of the law. You can seek out internships at organizations that handle animal law cases and participate in the annual Animal Law Moot Court, closing argument and lobbying and drafting competitions that are organized by the Center for Animal Law Studies at Lewis and Clark, but it's actually sponsored at Harvard Law School, and attend the ALDS conferences. They have ALDS has an annual conference every year. It's probably the biggest thing in the country on focusing on animal law issues. And of course, you want to join our ABA TIPS Animal Law Committee. But you know, the other thing is on a grassroots level, what I try to do with our program here is also try to make sure that we're working on the ground. We host, for example, the Big Mac, which is the Mobile Adoption Center for Washington Humane Society, on our campus every semester to bring the, you know, the homeless dogs and cats to campus. And at least they get a day out in the sun and everybody has a good time. But on Meat Out Day, we celebrate Meat Out Day hosting a vegan bake sale. And I know you guys just had yours last week, and I understand it was a fabulous success.
It was awesome.
And work in the community, you know, to volunteer at whatever organizations you have there. It's fun if you get a group of your friends together, you know, work through the Saldus group and go out and help on the ground, too. It's just a lot you can do.
I know it seems impossible to imagine after all of that, but we understand you are also, in addition to all these other projects, working on a book that will be coming out soon. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I just was getting the last chapter. You know, of course, I mentioned the U.S. v. Stevens case or have a discussion of the Stevens case in the book. And, of course, when the decision came out last week, I had to hurry up and edit the chapter to discuss what the Supreme Court actually said about it. I just sent it off literally last night. But it was first conceived when I heard of the launch of the Oxford Center's Animal Law Ethics Series. I'm actually a fellow at the center. And Andrew Lindsay and Priscilla Cohn, who run the center there, accepted my proposal and have given me this fabulous opportunity to author. It's an introductory text that just looks sort of globally, if you will, at animals and the law and the treatment that we, you know, that we provide to non-human animals. It is really, I'm hoping it's going to be well received. I'm a little nervous about it right at the moment, but it's directed to a very wide audience. Generally, it's a textbook for undergrads, grads, and postgrads, both in law, sort of philosophy, and ethics. And it, I look sort of across the board at issues raising from, you know, our cruelty laws to our animal welfare laws to the, quote, animal control and management laws. And there's even a sort of a global perspective because although it's primarily based in U.S. law, I do try to have some comparisons with the United Kingdom, the European Union, Australasia, because in a lot of these regards, those countries are actually quite a bit farther ahead of us in some of these areas. So the idea is to sort of present a survey of, you know, the current vision of animal law and what our current legal regime is. And then it ends with a chapter sort of focusing on how we might revise, if you will, the legal regime that we currently, as we currently know it, and work to sort of add animals in more as subjects than mere objects within the law and have a more sort of all-inclusive, like I said, legal regime that will actually recognize the inherent worth of animals and not just sort of their worth based on our human use.
Wow. That sounds amazing. I can't wait till it comes out. That's incredible. Well, I think it's going to be an enormous resource.
There's, you know, there are some really fabulous casebooks out there. The Animal Law Cases and Materials, which is co-authored by Sonia Weissman, Pamela Frash, and Bruce Wagman, was really, I guess, the first true casebook on the market for law school seminars, and it's now in its third edition. And David Faber has put out a couple of fabulous, a recent casebook, and also he was the first one, really, I think back in 1983, to co-author with Murray Mooring a text on sort of a survey of American animal law. But, you know, now that it's becoming more of sort of a popular and recognized area of the law, I think there's a lot of opportunity for more writing to be done. So, but those guys have been, you know, were sort of the pioneers in the field. And I guess I'm seeing this as sort of almost the second generation of legal text in the area.
Well, Joan, I'm starting to think that maybe you're actually three or four people.
I can see why I'm intimidated having to be the chair of this committee after Joan.
Well, Joan, thank you so much for everything that you're doing for animals in every
way. Well, thank you. You guys, like I said, your website is just fabulous, and you're just, you know, really getting the word out there on veganism and working at the grassroots and coming up with all different ways to help animals. And I think that's, you know, it's really a wonderful resource. This internet really has completely changed the world, and I'm, you know, about still 10 years behind, but I'm always amazed at how we can reach people now and spread the word, you know.
Thank
so
you.
It's really
yeah,
great.
There's a section of our website that's specifically geared toward law opportunities. So for people who are interested in getting further involved, they can also check out our hen house and look for the Legal Eagles section of our website. So thank you, Joan, for joining us today in our hen house. We're really excited about all of these projects you're working on and can't wait to read your book. And also, we'll see you in Puerto Rico in a few weeks.
Yes, yes, I'm looking forward to that.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you for joining us today in our hen house, Joan.
Joan is a cool lady.
Yeah, she really is. I've never met anyone who works harder than Joan Schaffner.
And aside from her work, you know, we get to go to all these really odd corners of the country with the ABA, and we were in San Diego recently, and you had been in meetings all day. I actually was speaking in Phoenix that weekend, so went to Phoenix and then back to meet you in San Diego. We're like lying on the beach, you know, fully in our, like, you know, jeans and sweaters against a rock, completely wiped out. Do you remember this? And we look up and there's this woman just like jogging on the beach.
I know, in her spare time when she's not doing all the other stuff, she's jogging
and she's
exercising.
Like, she's running by us and she's like, "Hi guys." And she's like, and we're like completely comatose.
Yeah. It's not a great story about us.
No, it's not a good story about us. But I'm really enjoying the projects that you're working on for your upcoming chairwomanship?
Well, as
a, wait, hold on. Is the word chairwomanship? Chairmanship?
I think it's chair. I just use the whole man. Leave the whole man woman thing off of the word chair and just call it chair.
Okay.
I'm going to be a chair.
You're going to be a chair.
You can be the table.
I will be the table. That's another joke we've already said on our... We need new material. So you're going to be the chair, ourselves. And I watch you doing this work, and I think it's totally fascinating.
Well, it's much very much a work in progress. The Animal Law Committee is still relatively new, and we're moving into different areas, and I hope... I'm the chair of the Agricultural Law, as we call it, subcommittee this year, and we're hoping to make some moves and do some projects around farm animals.
Very exciting. Really cool. I really enjoyed hearing Joan speak because obviously, though I'm, you know, not a lawyer, I think that animal law issues really reach well beyond lawyer people.
Yeah, well, actually the law is not very kind to animals, and I'm not sure that much progress has been made getting it to be kinder to animals, but ultimately, if there are going to be policy changes, it will have to be legally. And of course, when we've been in states where laws can be passed actually just by people and not by legislatures, things have been better, as in the ballot initiatives. So we'll see what happens.
Let's get into some news now, shall we?
Okie doke!
Well, the big news for animals this week, I'm afraid, is really sad news. It's what's going on, or what really what's going to be going on this in the coming weeks down in Louisiana.
Again, Louisiana and their animals. Of course, there was an oil spill off the U.S. Gulf Coast.
Yeah, drill, baby, drill.
Right.
And it's a huge disaster. As everyone listening knows, it's just a terrible situation. And that oil is, it hasn't really hit yet, but when it hits land, that's when the bulk of the harm to birds is going to be done. The harm to sea life is probably going on now, but it's hard to know, I think, how badly, particularly the turtles, so the turtles, it's feared, are going to suffer a lot, and the birds, of course, are going to be devastated.
They said that it makes it difficult for different birds to float because of the oil damage, and if they ingest the oil during preening, it can do serious digestive tract damage. There's many different groups working on the rescue and recovery.
Yeah, they're putting together the rescue teams now. There's a lot of groups who work on this stuff. This is a pretty well-organized part of the movement because of the, you know, the interest in wildlife. So, but they need so many volunteers, or at least they think they're going to, because each animal has to be, of course, washed individually with, oddly, you know, the Dawn soap, which the Dawn soap has done all its ads about.
Right.
I never understood why Dawn and no other dish detergent is good for washing birds, but whatever. And I'm sure they're donating lots of Dawn soap.
I read that the presence of planes and boats as part of the cleanup operation is also a deterrent in keeping the animals out of the danger zone, so they're saying that that is a second advantage that's coming from the rescue efforts.
Yeah, hopefully. I think that that would apply largely to marine mammals. And I didn't really know there were that many marine mammals in the Gulf, but I guess there are. What do I know? I really don't know that much about animals when you think about it.
What?
It's sad but true. Well, about wildlife
about
stuff,
wildlife
you know?
Stuff.
But I think that this is for the people, kind of people who really like to do that hands-on stuff. They are really looking for volunteers. I guess the Audubon Society is one of the big coordinators, and there are many others as well. It would be very fulfilling, I think. It's just so sad to think that everybody, once again, has to run down to Louisiana. It's just horrible, too. They haven't capped this oil well yet. Yeah. God knows how bad this is going to be. It could just be unbelievable.
Well, it's been compared to the Exxon Valdez spill in Alaska in 1989, where I think 250,000 seabirds died.
Yeah, so and I think they're worried that it could be worse because it's a bad time because of nesting and also the fact that it's going to seep into those marshes and other areas of very, very sensitive land that's very important to wildlife. And that's not going to go away in a short amount of time. The harm could last for years and years.
I think that the Audubon...
I hate humans. I hate them.
Us.
I do, too. I think that the National Audubon Society is looking for volunteers right now, and what were the other groups? Oh, International Bird Rescue Center,
the American Bird Conservancy.
Okay, so those
There's
three.
A lot of them. I mean, people can probably find them online as well as we can, and but the large groups are probably doing the ones coordinating.
Well, I almost don't know how to transition into talking about our other news.
I know, because our other news is so good.
Right, it's so awkward. But I guess on saying it's awkward, we could just switch with that. We have had some very exciting news. CNN.com did a wonderful story on the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale.
The news is all about us. That's what's so exciting about it. It's actually about Jasmine.
It's about the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale, and it interviews many different people in it. And yes, I'm interviewed in it, and that was really exciting.
First line of the article.
Did you see what Will Potter said?
Yeah, I did, but I can't remember it.
Will Potter, who's behind the very popular blog Green is the New Red, said that what I said was the best quote he's ever heard on CNN.
Oh, that's right. I can't believe I forgot that comment.
That was pretty exciting.
And there's also a great picture of you and Marisa Miller-Wolfson, who shared the bake sale for the benefit of your mutual organization.
It's definitely
great photo.
It's definitely a big deal for everyone, for us, for our hen house, for the many other groups that were featured, and certainly for the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale. I think that the last time I checked, there were nearly 400 comments and 800 likes of the article.
Yeah, and of course, you started reading the comments.
Oh, that was a mistake.
Which one should never do.
That was a mistake.
Because even though a lot of them are good, there are just so many of them. You should never read comments
basically,
on anything in a major news
podcast. Well, I hadn't been planning on it, and then I was like, what the hell are 400 people talking about? So I looked, and there were people who like took the time out of their day to write, as a comment, steak. And there were a lot of those assholes, but there were also a lot of good people, too. And there was even a thread about me, because the article begins by saying that I looked the scientist in the eye, the scientist who did animal experimentation, and instead of exchanging harsh words, we exchanged a cupcake. And somebody wrote, I wonder if Jasmine Singer has ever taken medicine in her life that might have been tested on an animal.
Like, what was that supposed to mean?
I know, but anyway, so that was dopey.
They're just scared. They're scared that we're getting great coverage.
It was a completely positive piece. I don't even know how to say it. It was just like about cupcakes. And people got so defensive. It's just shocking.
It's the name of the game. It's their guilty consciences talking.
Right. So that's our pretty bipolar news today. So we did a Facebook survey once again, an official Our Hen House Facebook survey on my Facebook page.
Yes, our lazy woman's guide to doing a review. Get other people to do it for you. And we got so many.
We did. No, you know what? We did that twice before. This is our third time. And I always just really enjoy sitting back and watching the conversation happen. This time we asked people to say what their favorite animal rights themed books were, or vegan themed books.
And now I have to go sit down and read all of these books, which, I mean, I have read some of them, but there's lots of them I haven't.
Right. So the most votes, which I don't think was that surprising, was Eating Animals by Jonathan Safran Foer.
Yeah, a book that I have very, very positive feelings about.
And you're on page 51 of it.
Yes, and I am quoted. I'm quoted in the most popular animal books rights book ever written.
I think that's probably why it's the most popular book.
Oh, undoubtedly.
So some other high rankers, Carol Adams books in general, specifically Living Among Meat Eaters and Sexual Politics of Meat.
Yes, Real Perennials, always popular.
Jeffrey Musayef Mason, who...
I never know whether it's Mason. I tend to pronounce Masson. It in a very pretentious way, Masson. Masson. I don't know why.
So the books that people mentioned of his were The Pig Who Sang to the Moon and The Face on Your Plate. Now, I want to tell you, about a year ago, I was speaking at the Farm Sanctuary Hoedown, and so was Jeffrey, and by the end of the event, he was calling me the chicken lady. Do you think that's concerning?
No, I think that's such a compliment.
The chicken lady. And now, we have our hen house, and that was pre-our hen house days. So the other high-ranking books, Gary Francione books, Your Child or the Dog, and Animals as Persons.
Yeah.
You're just going to skip past that without commenting?
It's not my favorite. Peter, but, you know, to each his own, and I know a lot of people love his work. Not my favorite.
Peter Singer books.
Yeah. Ethics into Action, which is that wonderful, I mean, it's a biography. It's a biography of the activist life of the wonderful, amazing Henry Spira.
Weren't you once at Henry Spira's apartment?
I was.
That is so cool.
I was. That was many years ago.
You should have taken...
He's such a cool guy.
You should have taken something, like a tissue box or something. You could have been
I think that would have been a little embarrassing.
Also Animal Liberation, of course.
Obviously.
Other high rankers, Vegan Freak by Bob and Jenna Torres, In Unnatural Order by Jim Mason.
Yeah, one of my personal favorites. I read that book ages ago. It's one of my first books, and it meant a lot to me. And also, Jim Mason's just a really nice guy. If you haven't read it, I would recommend it.
Yeah.
I hope it holds up. I read it a long time ago.
Yeah.
Really interesting book.
The Food Revolution by John Robbins, Oldie but Goodie. And another high ranker was The Dreaded Comparison, written by Marjorie Spiegel. Some children's books were mentioned.
Yeah, that's exciting that people mentioned a few children's books, which I now want to read because I love, just as I love cartoons, I love children's books.
I also
Maybe
love children's books. I will not comment on that.
You're just childish.
Childlike. 'Twas the Night Before Thanksgiving by Dav Pilkey was mentioned. So was Hubert the Pudge by...
Love the title. Hubert the Pudge.
By well, listen to the author. Henrik Drescher.
Ah, yeah.
And The Magic Finger by Raoul Dahl.
Yeah, I have to read that. I want to read that right away.
You know, another great children's book is Our Farm by Maya Gottfried, and Maya was...
Yeah, and you did that great video about that book.
Yeah, I enjoyed that very much. That's a brand new book. So some books on art were mentioned. Well, one book on art was mentioned, Dead Meat by Sue Coe.
Oh, the unbelievably fabulous, amazing, devastating, heart-rending Sue Coe.
So I bought my mom that book once for Mother's Day, and she gave it back to me.
Really?
She was like, I don't want this... Is that wrong?
It's a nice thing to say about
it. It was pretty much like she just didn't want it.
Too much. It's very intense.
It is.
It's very intense, very hard to take.
You have such a beautiful Sue Coe print hanging at your office.
Yeah, it is. It's also very painful, but I do love it.
And that actually, art, we talked about our Art of the Animals series, which is starting up soon, and we have some cool news about an exhibit, speaking of art and veganism.
Yeah, we had blogged about it, but I can't, it's going to open soon, near us, in the meatpacking district, of all places.
It's called Go Vegan, and it's a whole exhibit about going vegan, and it's being done in an old meatpacking plant.
Right, it's a meatpacking plant, and they just exited the meatpacking company for New Jersey, and this gallery that was next to it, which I think is a very prestigious gallery, by the way, and certainly if it's in the meatpacking district, which has become a very fancy-schmancy part of town, and now it's a huge gallery, and they're going to devote the whole gallery to this show called Go Vegan. I can't wait. I'm dying to see it.
I'm excited.
We will tell you all about it.
Some books on religion were mentioned. Is God a Vegetarian by Richard Allen Young?
I know. I never heard that. That sounds very interesting.
And Animal Theology by Andrew Lindsay.
Yes, of course. Andrew Lindsay has written many books on the topic.
You know who mentioned Is God a Vegetarian and Animal Theology was Calla Wright and Nick Pichetti, who were on our podcast talking about religion. So that's appropriate. And Dominion, which is sort of a religion book by Matthew Scully, who, of course, wrote Sarah Palin's speech when she was nominated.
Yeah, which, you know, like, Matthew Scully is that good a writer. He actually wrote a speech that made Sarah Palin, apparently. I don't think I thought it made her look intelligent, but it did to a lot of people. It's just, you know, who understands Matthew Scully and what makes him tick? But Dominion is a hell of a book.
Some fiction books were mentioned. The Woman and the Ape by Peter Hoag. I've never heard of that.
I want to read it now. I want to read it.
I've never heard of it. I'm excited. Ishmael, of course, by Daniel Quinn.
Yeah, great book. I read that so long ago.
And one of your favorites, The Lives of Animals by J.M. Coetzee. How do you say that?
Coetzee, I think.
Coetzee. J.M. Coetzee, The Lives of Animals. You like him.
Yeah, he's a devastating... Well, of course. I mean, he's a Nobel Prize-winning writer. Like, you know, I don't think my opinion really counts.
Oh, sweetheart, I think your opinion counts. Some other books that were mentioned that we wanted to mention because we like them. Farm Sanctuary by Jean, who was on our podcast last week.
Yeah, a great story. And also, I think as we mentioned last week, but why not repeat ourselves interminably, those great animal stories. Mm-hmm. It's worth reading just for the animal stories.
Thanking the Monkey by Karen Dawn, which is one of my favorites. Book. I actually, in our notes here, I wrote, like, all these stars because that's one of my favorites. I think everyone should own a copy of Thanking the Monkey. It's like an encyclopedia about every single animal issue, and Karen Dawn is a really brilliant writer. She really is. Yeah,
extremely accessible. Just really pins the issues really well. I love the job she did with that.
Another book that's currently on our bookshelf that we haven't read yet.
Along with 10 billion other books. I buy books. I don't necessarily read them. But I feel that somehow I absorb their wisdom by their being in the house.
Through osmosis. It's called Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows. I almost said, and wear kids. An Introduction to Carnism by Melanie Joy. I really want to read that, and we have it. Speciesism by Joan Dunayer.
Yeah, that's another word I'm not sure how you pronounce. Dunayer, Dunayer.
Skinny Bitch, obviously, by Rory Friedman and Kim Barnuin. What is up with these people?
With these hard-to-pronounce names.
Skinny Bitch has revolutionized our movement. The World Peace Diet by Will Tuttle.
I'm ashamed to say, never read it, though it's wildly popular.
Another one that I like very much, Fast Food Nation by Eric Schlosser. And one of the things I like about it is that it really gets into the human rights aspects.
Yeah, it's not so much of an animal rights book, right, though.
But that's partly why I like it. I think that people who are interested in human rights issues could get turned on to animal rights issues through that book. And Empty Cages by Tom Regan.
Reagan.
Oh, my gosh. I'm doing terribly today.
Is it
I just Tom Reagan? I called
no,
it
Tom Regan, yeah.
Okay, Reagan.
Yeah, I don't have Empty Cages. I tried to read The Case for Animal Rights by Tom Regan once, and this isn't a criticism of the book, it's a criticism of me. I mean, it's a serious philosophical treatise, and it was too heavy for me.
Hmm. But you know what I found super interesting about this list? Because there's other books mentioned that we didn't mention. You could find the whole list on my Facebook page, Jasmine Singer, no E, not on our Hen House's Facebook page, because people tend to engage more in dialogue on mine for some reason. Though I hope that you also become a fan, or shall I say liker, of our Hen House's Facebook fan liker page. They call it liker now. But one thing that I found totally fascinating about this discussion was that even the high-ranked books were only mentioned a couple times. We had dozens of
responses.
That's
why we had to go on and on and on about this huge list. Well, yeah, it's so interesting. There's so many great books.
But there's so many different things that touch different people.
Yeah.
That's what I loved about this.
Yeah, that's really true.
It's just really fascinating. Like, we have everything from, like, Peter Singer to, like, children's books mentioned by, you know, really awesome activists who this is their favorite book. I love that is out there. So start reading, support your local library.
Yes, absolutely.
Your local secondhand bookstore.
Or you can buy original books.
Or you
can
buy original books.
It's a legitimate thing to do, especially if they're animal rights books.
And if you
support those authors.
And if you have books that you're done with, animal rights books or even cookbooks, donate them because then you're making them available to others as well. So that's cool. So, in follow-up to a conversation that we had last week regarding our sound effects, we asked people to comment whether or not they liked them or not.
I can't believe you're bringing this up.
I have to.
You're so defensive.
Because every single email I got about this and every comment I got about my Facebook page, everything said, bring them on. Not one person said to stop them. So,
well, let's not overdo.
I'm not going to overdo, but I'm going to do a little bit here and there, okay? I'll find a happy medium. I'll make everybody happy. This week, we also went to the Sea Shepherd party. We didn't get any vegan treats.
I know.
Vegan treats are the best vegan dessert
and
ever.
And she had beautiful, beautiful,
beautiful
desserts there, but we couldn't manage to stay long enough because it was Friday night and I was tired and there was no place to sit. And, of course, it was a cocktail party. It was very crowded and I was grouch.
You are usually a grouch on Friday nights. You're tired.
Well, I came right from work, and I'm standing around, and I wanted a vegan treat, and they wouldn't let us have them.
It was a cool party,
and
though.
It was very crowded, and I'm just, you know, I'm just not a party animal.
But it was a good space. It was at this really cool, like,
it was a beautiful space.
Hardware-y space, and I thought it was a good party. And
there was a Japanese film crew filming outside. I felt like it was the FBI.
That's funny. And I did manage to get an on-camera interview with Paul Watson, and I'm not sure if I'm ever going to show it because it's not that good. It's like a 30-second interview, and I asked him a question. He didn't like my question. I was kind of confused, and he was kind of snarky. So I'm not sure.
I'm not sure he was snarky. I think that you're overreacting to that. I think he was caught a little off guard and wasn't sure how to answer. I think you're being cruel.
Well, I appreciate you, Captain Watson. So that's about it for us, I think. It's been a crazy week, and I think we need to decompress now. Visit our website, ourhenhouse.org, or com, but org, go with org. Email us, info@ourhenhouse.com. We're still at info@ourhenhouse.com.
That's a little confusing.
I know, I'm sorry. I'll iron this out by next week, I promise. Become our Facebook liker. Become my Facebook friend so that you can partake in our Facebook surveys. And for the love of God, go vegan if you're not already. Bye.